You're listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast, your primary source of information related to the hospitality industry in Washington State.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming today and for understanding when we had to postpone this due to the weather about a month ago in Seattle. Today, we have Aaron Blank and Kyle Wall here from Theory Group. They are communications professionals, and they're going to walk us through Crisis Communications 101. We are recording this webinar, and it will be up on our website and sent to your inboxes today. And I also want to give a little bit of a plug for Hill Climb, which is going to be January 27th. If you want to get involved and visit with your legislators and talk a little bit about that, you can register now at hospitalityhillclimb.org, and you can do that at any time, and you can help lead the conversation with our legislature in Olympia this winter. And also, I would like to give a plug for our advisory network. Both Aaron and Kyle are members of our advisory network, and as members, you are entitled to a 30-minute consultation with any one of them. So please reach out to your territory managers and they can put you in touch if you need them. And go ahead and type all your questions in the Q&A section of your screen. During this webinar, we can get to it when we can and answer them live. And with that, I'm going to hand it off to Aaron and Kyle. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone. I hope you are getting ready for the holidays and are not dealing with any type of crisis this time of year. I am Aaron Blank, President, CEO of Theory. I've got Kyle Wall, who is a vice president at our firm, who is often alongside me on any type of crisis situation that we're dealing with. I've been doing this for 25 plus years, and I can tell you I've been involved with all different types of crisis from a communications standpoint. We're often called in to serve alongside attorneys. You often say, why do I need a PR person or a communications person to help me think through a crisis of any sorts? And I would offer that we offer the what we say is we help serve the public's best interest in a time of crisis, and we are called in to help you communicate in a time of service. And so what I would say is it's an opportunity to help attorneys really humanize their messaging. And that's what one of the purposes of having a PR person or someone from the communication side involved in it. Kyle, do you want to kick off anything or you want to get started here?
No, I think we can dig in. Thanks everyone for taking the time out today, and looking forward to talking through. And we encourage conversation throughout. So feel free to plug any questions in you can, and we'll turn this into a discussion more than a lecture. So looking forward to it.
So I'm going to bounce around between presentation as well as some clips, at least in the start of this. So I'm not going to go to slideshow format mode just yet, because I got to bounce around between the screen. But to get started, we're going to bounce into helping you understand what crisis communications is, help you get grounded in it. We've got some recent crisis situations, one right in our own backyard. You all might know of a sushi restaurant that had to deal with a major crisis the last couple weeks because of a simple TikTok video that went viral. Look, this morning there was over 23 million views on one click of it all. And so I got a video clip that I'll show you on that. We're going to talk about preparation and planning, how to get started and think about. I realize there's folks that own restaurants, there's people in hotels, there's people in the services industry, there's probably some folks from legal, all encompassing the folks on this call. So we'll jump into all different aspects and help you think through that, offering some effective communication strategies, looking at crisis response and management, and then how to deal with the post. So for example, that sushi restaurant that is currently dealing with the after effects of their viral gone wrong video and what that did to their business. And we'll talk about, so what could they have done differently? So let me get into it. I'm going to actually open up and go right into that video clip, because I think it sets a good grounding for what we're talking about. Let me get the right screen up here and share it. And let me play it.
They've been a whirlwind for this business, and they say despite all the concerns that have been raised on social media, they are still big fans of the platform, and they were relieved when they saw the doors open and a steady stream of customers. What happens when a popular sushi bar goes viral for the wrong reasons? Loyal customers come back.
Well, it's honestly been a guilty pleasure.
I've never done, but I definitely was a little bit like, it did look pretty funky. It was more like, how are they going to come back from this?
Come back from this viral video of a TikTok food review. Users commented the sushi appeared to wiggle before food influencer Keith Lee ate it, causing them to think a worm was in the raw seafood. That set off a firestorm of comments and concerns. The viral video now with over 21 million views.
So after the videos, like, we still want to make sure that everything is like up to the standard.
2 weeks ago, Vincent Chen and his brothers voluntarily shut down both of their FOB sushi bars and reviewed their supply chain, food storage, and safety protocols. The health department also inspected and gave them an excellent rating, the highest in their food rating system. What will you say to that first commenter who got this whole thing started?
This social media thing, the small business like us benefit us a lot. Yeah, we still believe in it.
Customers were well aware of the controversy. Dan Lee was first in line when they reopened. He said he can't resist the allure of the buffet style and the pay by the pound.
It's not deterring me from eating here. I think like TikTok and like X or Twitter or whatever have definitely like gained like a new traction.
We can survive COVID, and then we believe we can still get stronger from this.
Now the health department did their inspection while they were closed. That's not the end of inspections here. In fact, they tell me they'll be back while they're operating, and that inspection will be unannounced. The brothers also tell me they believe they lost about $100,000 closing both of their sushi bars for 2 weeks. Reporting live in Belltown, I'm Michelle Esteban, Como News.
So this was literally a couple weeks ago. They are dealing with the after effects, just recently reopened. Let me come back to my screen share here, wherever it is on my screen. But basically, they have, I would say, done a good job in figuring out how to get started through that crisis. I mean, I don't know where that was going to go. They closed down. And what I offer is this clip from Warren Buffett, who said it takes 20 years to build a reputation, but it literally can take you 5 minutes, or in this case, one TikTok, to really ruin it. These folks have lost over $100,000 of business. I'd say their reputation, they're probably people thinking twice, but I would also say in this case that probably people are really in support, as noted on this thing. They'll come out okay. Cal, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to plant the seed before we get into kind of the various types of responses or different ways to respond to something like this. Maybe just for you all in attendance to think about, if this was your business, how would you react if you saw a viral video come out about something that was your business? What kind of steps would you immediately take? And maybe just have that in the back of your head as we talk about what we would recommend in something like that, and maybe can compare it to what they did. I mean, obviously they could have gone a couple different ways. They could have shut down. They clearly welcomed the local TV into their restaurant and did an interview, which sometimes might be appropriate, sometimes might not be. In this case, I think it came off looking pretty well, between them being confident in the safety of their restaurant and the segment including positive customers as well. So that came off like a success, and it seems like people are still using their business. But obviously they could have gone a different way, whether they had professional advice or not. So I think we'll get into what some of those different approaches might look like as we move through here.
One of the things I often say, and I coach people on, is if you are thinking about communications and crisis communications, I would consider your online reputation as an additional storefront. And how you manage your online reputation and how much you invest in it should almost equal what you put into your actual storefront. If you have a physical location, if you have an office, or if you're virtual, all those things back in the day, it's all about what is that online virtual storefront look like? Because all these people are on it now. And managing your reputation online is as important as someone walking into your restaurant, your hotel, your office these days. So consider that as we go through this. And I appreciate you all joining us this morning. We're going to be with you for 45 more minutes or so, going through a whole bunch of different scenarios, offering tips. The Q&A box is open. There's a chat box. We are taking questions. I'd encourage anyone that has questions just to go ahead and put it in there, and we'll throughout the conversation come back and try to address them as we go forward. And of course, I'll be available post. You could find me on the internet. We'll give my contact information out. I often say you could have my cell phone. It's on the internet. In a time of crisis, just give us a call, that type of deal, and we'll go through it. So in this case, sushi gone wrong, a video clip, over 23 million people have seen it. This restaurant, from my standpoint, has done a good job recovering and managed through it. They were open and honest through the conversation. They closed for 2 weeks and reopened and are taking it on. And I don't know if there's anyone counseling them behind the scenes, but overall, what I've seen thus far is a good outcome of it. A couple other crises that I'll just set tease y'all with as we go through this, and we'll get into some of the logistics. One is Costco's butter recall, and I know I'm actually counseling some folks right now dealing with products that are going national in, say, Costco, and they're thinking about, well, what happens if they need to recall butter? In the case of Costco, they forgot to put the words dairy containing milk in their ingredients on it. So they had to issue a recall of just butter. And I think the purpose of sharing this is just showing you the different types of crisis that people might have that you have to be thinking about as you are working through your days. This one is a really, really old one. 1994, there was a lawsuit brought out by Liebeck against McDonald's. And if you all remember this, those who were old enough, someone went through the McDonald's drive-thru and spilled their entire coffee all over themselves, burned themselves, sued McDonald's, won. And today's dollar amount that they received back then is equivalent of $5.6 million from this accident that happened. And that's the result of many of us having to write hot beverage on the side of our cups and go through it. So that's one. And then another most recent one that I got a kick out of was just attention to detail and making sure that your business really thinks through things like URLs, the www on the online thing. Mattel, as big as Mattel is, on a recent Wicked Doll, they put wicked.com, and don't Google it, because if you're at work, it's a porn site. It was a mistake. It was on a doll, on a Wicked Doll that was sold nationally. On the URL, on the packaging, they printed porn site that people went to. And it was a huge mistake on their part. They came out and apologized for it. And I think they recovered just fine, got a lot of publicity for this mistake. But again, these are all different types of crisis that can emerge in your world. And I start off with some sensationalism just to kind of set the tone for the types of things we deal with. I've seen, the typical stuff could be workplace violence, HR issues, data theft, you name it. There could be a host of different things that you might be dealing with, but these are some of those that teed up. So let's get started with what defines a crisis. So it's a threat to an organization, something that can be causing injury or loss of life from a public safety standpoint, financial impacts of it all, things that reputation hits can have. It could really impact the bottom line if you're not prepared or thinking ahead about it. And of course, reputation loss. So again, it takes 20 years to build a reputation. It could take 5 minutes, or in the case of the sushi restaurant, a TikTok video to really destroy it. So think about that as you go forth on it. Thinking ahead, things that you should be thinking about as you consider crisis communications. One most important thing I'd say whenever I come into a situation, I'm often called after the fact when there is a crisis, but given the fact most of you are on this call, you're probably not dealing with it, but these are the things you should be thinking about. So a chain of command from a business standpoint, who are the people that need to be involved in a situation of any of those that I just explained there? who needs to be called to the table, and then if you need to put someone out in the media or on TikTok or in social media to respond, who is that person going to be? And if it's nobody on your current roster, how do you plan? How do you go create that? Most of you don't want to go talk to the media. Most of you are not even media trained. So I would offer what are those key things? And there are people like myself and others, and I don't like to go on camera, but we offer the folks in the community. There's even TV news retired folks that would serve as a spokesperson on it. So just think ahead as you go through it. Others, just understand all the types of different issues. And hopefully you have this from an asset management standpoint, a risk management side of your portfolio. And I know there's been webinars on risk management. From a crisis management standpoint, understand the types of issues and different types of crises that your organization might encounter. I would consider, as you head into the new year, just list out all the different types of crises that you possibly can be thinking about just to have and prepare for it. And what we would offer is suggest you perhaps take 12 months, one a month next year, just write a short paragraph holding statement on that crisis issue that you might have or encounter next year. What would be that holding statement? Holding statement meaning, how would you respond to that situation that you would have? And then I'd encourage you to just put it in a folder and stick it away. You just don't know a matter of when this is gonna happen. It's not a matter if, it's a matter of when any of these types of issues might emerge. Kyle, you, I see your mic off there.
Yeah, I would just add a couple things to that. I think in terms of always better to sketch out as much as you can in terms of preparation, but in addition to what's bulleted here, I think the different channels that might be leveraged during a crisis, not just when, you know, what the statement is, but rather where it might go, what situations warrant a social media response, what warrant a media response, what warrants an internal email. Trying to add notes to that as well, I think would be valuable as you're sketching these things out. And also, we'll get into this a little bit more later, but also the internal side, do you need to address your internal team as opposed to just an external statement? What sort of internal comms need to go out? Are just kind of more in-depth conversations to consider here in addition to what's on that slide. Aaron, I don't know if you should change something on your share screen, but we're only seeing the side of your window right now, the left.
Oh, weird. Okay, let me stop sharing fast. I'll reset that up.
Shortly into, there it is, back now.
Other types of crisis that you might, as part of that list that we'd offer up, here's some of them. So of course, foodborne illness, health violations, those are probably more common than not. Business closures, sexual harassment or HR issues. We often work with, as part of the advisory council, Catherine Morissette from Fisher Phillips on labor issues. So she services businesses, and we've been partners with her in a whole bunch of different types of issues in our communities. Natural disaster. I never thought pandemic would be a real thing in my lifetime, but planning for the next pandemic, what would happen in that situation? And I was not prepared for that, and can only imagine how the rest of us were during that. Crime and guest safety incidences, accidents, data breaches, those are more common than not. And so thinking about how you support that, one of the things I'd offer up when it comes to communications, PR, crisis stuff, we are often called into business situations and are said, hey, go fix this. And what I would offer back in those times of crisis is that communications is not gonna fix a business problem. You have to make a decision around your business, the situation that's gonna protect the business assets, and then communications will come in and figure out the solutions and strategies around that. Communication should not be driving your business. Business should not be driving communication. So these are all things that will come in after the fact as a support mechanism as you go forward. And so here's the rest. And of course, I think you probably are all dealing with negative online reviews. And if you're not online right now on Google or on Yelp, and even just responding to negative comments by saying, hey, thanks for the input. We'd like to talk to you more. Here's an email address to continue the conversation. a simple message like that on your reviews would go a long way when it comes to reputation management. All right, jumping into understanding crisis communications a bit here. So a definition, just to get grounded in what that is. Crisis communications refers to the strategies and tactics used by organizations to communicate with key stakeholders, employees, customers, suppliers, public, and others during a crisis or emergency. And what I would offer is that when it comes to a crisis, I often tell our clients and folks, less is more. The more you say, the more risk you put out there. And I often, one of the things you'll hear me say later on, I've got a tip sheet of never say no comment. And so if there's a way to come at crisis communications and admit something, even if it's you're not at fault, the biggest thing is just saying sorry. That's an emotional, psychological support mechanism that even if you didn't do anything, just apologizing for the situation, if there's a loss of life or someone that's been impacted, we are sorry for the situation that's here. We're investigating, we're working with the authorities. If you need more information, you could contact the local, whoever's involved, if it's a police or fire department or you name it, a local PIO at another, just kind of deflect it outside of the organization. Simply stating that will go a long way. You don't need to say anything more than what I just said ever in a time of crisis as you go forward and continue to just be proactive and communicate in that. The importance of crisis communications is really to protect the reputation, the organization, and the business assets that you've worked so hard to go create in your lifetime.
And I would just add to that, as I think has been echoed already, a lot of these most famous crisis situations, it's not just the initial kind of incident or crisis that ruins a reputation. It's often the initial response by the organization or individual that's either tone deaf or out of bounds or very just over the top or whatever it might be. A lot of times it is just not thinking through the right response gets people in much deeper than even the original incident does.
So a crisis plan blueprint. So how do I go create one? You're aiming to protect customer trust, your loyalty that you built, reputation, your financial situation, personal life, of course. When it comes to a crisis, being fast, prompt, offering speed is really important. If you're not quick to react, then you're seen as being slow and you might be hiding something. So having a plan in place that allows you to respond quickly. If you're out of town, if you're the leader of the organization, CEO, owner, what happens if there's a crisis while you're in Barbados or the Bahamas? How do you think about that as you go there? What's plan B for that situation? Obviously you're a phone call away, but can you act fast or swiftly if something happens at your business? So consider that situation and how communications can support that and the things you need to put in place there. Another thing, transparency and honesty. I cannot tell you how many times I have seen companies or organizations go wrong because they lied or they said something that wasn't truthful, even though they meant to be truthful, or they didn't fact check something like Mattel. That was a dishonest thing there, but just fact check as much as you can as you go forward in anything. Transparency will serve and outserve any type of tactic or situation that you have out there. So work to be as 100% honest as you possibly can in all situations, even if you can't comment. Yeah, most crisis, you don't want to say too much. It could be a legal investigation. You could be working with authorities, but simply just being 100% transparent as you go through it is a critical thing. Empathy is another. That's that, hey, I'm sorry for people that, you know, have lost a life or loved ones or things that are in there, really offering and showing empathy as part of it. And of course, accountability. So coming forward and owning, like the sushi restaurant, hey, they didn't really say that there was I still don't know if there was a worm in that food that was showing. It was someone that commented on a TikTok video that hey, there's something moving in your sushi that created that whole viral thing. But in the end, they closed down their shop for 2 weeks. That owned the issue. They looked through their supply chain and went forward on it. And that there showed that they truly took the situation very seriously. The accountability part too for them, when the public health department came forward, which I think was a critical message for them, and I don't know if they teed off the news folks to go talk to the public health department, but they gave them a grade A rating in the end. And so that to me shows that they are on top of it. They reopened and they've got a clean, safe restaurant, despite not knowing if there was an actual worm in that person's sushi or not. And then the other thing I'd say is, simply put, you can monitor Google alerts. You could put up search things right now and set up an alert. So anytime your business or industry is called upon negatively in any aspect or positively, you'd have there. And I would also encourage, if you're a high profile owner of a restaurant or a hotel or business of any kind, or manager, just set up a profile on Google Alerts for your own name, so that you're tracking to that as well. So a great tip for you there as well.
Yeah. And then just in terms of that last one, making sure that you have those alerts set up, whether it's on social or media, gives you so much extra runway to prepare if there is a controversy. So you're not hearing about a viral TikTok video with the worm from the local news asking about it for the first time, but you're hearing about it once it starts to make the rounds on social. And again, even if that's just 24 hours of extra preparation or proactiveness you could make, it's a big help to be prepared and have those types of alerts set up.
So moving on, of course, we talked about identifying your potential risks, establishing the protocol for activating. If there is a crisis communications team that you could activate or someone to activate, you have, again, through the advisory council, the ability to call us for a half hour of counsel. So we're of service to you should there be, as part of the advisory council for the Washington Hospitality Association, part of the network that we're included in. But you put us in, write us in as, you know, someone to reach out to should you have something that's going on. I'm available 24/7. I've done things, some of the most major crisis situations in our state I've been involved in, and our team has been involved in, so we can support you as needed. I would say know the media too in your local market. Who are the, you know, who are the TV stations, who's the radio stations, even though they're, you know, media, the old school version of media that is still very relevant. They have the ability to really make things drive forward on social media. They can make things go viral just because the power of TV and radio and networks. And despite 1 in 10 people actually paying attention to the regular media, they have huge influence. It's online, it shows up, it's a reputational link that will live on forever. You can't really do anything with regular press. So the press are a number one priority for you, in addition to some of those influencers that are the social media folks that are out there. Another strategy that you can consider with your website, I would work with your web team to have maybe a page that, if you needed to have go dark, if there's a crisis of some situation that happens at your business, you don't want your normal restaurant, if it's a restaurant, sort of ads showing up on your homepage. You want to have a quiet page, a go dark page. And so can you go create a go dark a landing page behind the scenes that if you had a worst case scenario that you're able just to put up and implement, so that you're not having to think about that in the moment? Again, this is your storefront online, and most people will attack your website almost immediately in a time of crisis. Go look at it. They'll, you know, if there's stuff up there that could impact your reputation in negative ways because of what you have up there is something to consider. And then I would also always, we call it public relations for a reason, always include the public in your plans. How are you representing the public? They're your biggest stakeholder. These are all consumers of your audience. So how do you include them in your plans as you think through all the things that you're working on? We got two more of these ideas. I always, in a time of crisis, counsel folks to sit, pause, listen, react. Don't just jump in and start communicating. I can't tell you in the hospitality industry in particular how often we are very emotionally triggered to go out there and communicate and react to folks. You really have to reflect on it. This is a big situation when it comes to crisis stuff. and then react to it. We often say, listen to, you can go on Twitter, which is now X, and type in, go to the search bar and type in your business name to see if there's any discussions that are happening. You could often trigger and identify things online before they happen by setting up those alerts in there. Develop an idea by listening to your audiences, or even bringing your audiences to the table in a time of crisis to have them help you say what you need to say as part of that. And then if you don't have something to say, if you don't need to say anything, I said this earlier, I'll say it again, simply saying and acknowledging the situation, saying sorry, how sad we are to be in this situation or to be a part of this, is shown a lot of empathy. And I would encourage you to often consider that type of language and reaction. That's all you need to say. Then reassess and regroup and determine your next step in how you proceed. And this last page, avoid saying no comment. It's in my firm, I counsel our team all the time to never ever tell folks to ever offer up the word no comment. To me, it is a curse word at our agency. And the reason for that is it shows, like, if you're having no comment, that shows you're hiding something, or you're saying something that is that's saying something. And we often say, can you come up with a line that says, hey, we're cooperating, we don't know what's going on with the situation, but we're committed to being as transparent as possible. I didn't say anything, I didn't say no comment, but I offered up a response that shows that we're going to be a partner in this with the public, with your audiences, versus saying no comment.
And I would just add to that, you know, there even is a slight difference between initially, if a reporter reaches out and maybe you're not quite ready to talk to the media or give a statement, and they end up running a story an hour later, it might say, you know, so-and-so organization did not immediately respond to comment, which you do see a lot, but that's still better than, to Aaron's point, actually being on the record saying no comment or we don't have a comment. It shows that you're making a point to not say anything, as opposed to looking a little better if the paper just says, hey, you know, we didn't hear back from them. It could mean yet, it could mean at all, but it's a better look than actually being on the record saying no comment. So we'd definitely avoid that, even if you're not quite ready to share a response formally yet.
Another version of that is, I don't have that information at this time, but what I can tell you is, I often, reporters or someone might respond, social media influencer might respond to you and say, hey, they're trying to speculate. So hypothetically, if your restaurant had a worm in your food, could it have come from your supply chain, from the supplier in Oregon named so-and-so? And it's, if you don't have the facts, you can't speculate on that. So I would encourage you to remain honest and factual, and say something like, I can't speculate, I won't speculate, I don't know the information at this time, but I'll update you, or I'll get back to you as soon as possible. We don't have anything to offer you at this time. And then when you're working with authorities, there's things called these public information officers, these PIOs, that work for city government or police or fire. We often are working with them. And these are folks that their job is to communicate with the public. And so for bigger situations where it involves fire or someone from public safety, the best part of that situation from a crisis communication standpoint is you could refer all the communications over to those individuals. And I counsel our, whether it's a construction company that's putting on, that's developing a hotel or a construction, any of those types of companies that are dealing with it, and there's stuff that involves the public, that involves these folks, you could just direct folks over to the PIOs at those organizations and say, hey, we don't have information, but the person in charge at the city is so-and-so PIO, and you can call them for more information. And that usually, you know, all press or anyone that's reaching out will go away for the time being and come back to you as needed later on, as you're committed to that transparent conversation. So here's the stages of a crisis, and any questions thus far? Anyone come forward with any questions? I don't see any coming through. Okay, feel free to, if you have questions, pop them in, populate. I'm willing to take them as we go forward here. Stages of a crisis, there's the warning stage, there's the initial impact stage, then there's the management stage, and of course recovery, the four stages of a crisis. So as you're thinking through the different types of crises that you go through, here's the ones that you would consider. Okay, how do I prepare? How do I plan for a crisis from a communication standpoint? So again, just rehashing roles and responsibilities. Who on the crisis, who on the management team, the ownership group is involved? Do I have investors? When do they need to know? Do I have a board? How do I communicate to them? Or is there the chair person involved in our crisis? Do we have them on the data? Who needs to know and when? So think about the stakeholders, thinking about the timing and put that in place. But more importantly, who are the key people that are going to be helping me on the front lines of the situation? Communication protocols, just developing out the plan for the type of crisis you might be dealing with. You have employees, when do I communicate with them? How often? If there's no power in the building, how do I communicate with them from a communication standpoint? If there's a major earthquake, what happens? You know, these are natural disaster type stuff. How do I manage the situation when it comes to all those types of things? And then messaging. That's the different types of responses that I'd encourage you to consider as you put forward the documents that you might be creating. So on the crisis communications management team, it's a diverse team, making sure that you have different forms of people that are serving the crisis management people. That means different layers of leadership, different parts of folks that are in different parts of the company. In a hotel, it's housekeeping, it's catering, it's management, all those different types of leaders that need to be connected, and you got to determine how to communicate to them. And then again, quick reaction time is a really important piece of the conversation. Crisis simulation and trainings. These are, I don't know if some of you might be doing tabletop exercises on an annual basis where you might bring folks together. But from a communication standpoint, could you run them, if you're owning a restaurant, run folks through a simulation where there's a worm in the food and it shows up in a TikTok video, how do we respond? And then put your staff through a simulation of sorts that might test them on how to manage that type of situation. I've been a part of full scale, depending on the type of company or organization you have, full scale drills where there's, we've had folks from the fire department that could come in and do an exercise and talk through the different situations that they've been involved in. Everything from terrorism to fires are things that they can talk through as part of that. Kyle, anything on the crisis simulation training stuff?
No, I was just going to note one thing from the last slide or two in terms of just that diverse team composition. I think this is especially relevant when, you know, you have to think through every different aspect of your team and how they might respond to certain crises. Some crises do affect your employees more than others in terms of maybe a workplace incident or a controversy with a leader or something like that, where you do have to pay dedicated attention to how you're messaging this internally. Whereas some organizations, perhaps like the sushi example, are almost exclusively focused on the community and external audiences. So making sure that you've got different, in the former category, making sure you've got different messaging for different groups internally, all the different employees you have, making sure that you're dedicating a lot of time to that is really important, especially if you have a crisis where they might go to the media or they all might go on strike or whatever it might be where they require extra special attention. So you'll know that when it happens, but definitely worth warrant thinking in advance.
So effective communication strategies as you're considering a crisis comms plan, of course, crafting tailored messages. I often consider, when you're considering perhaps TV interview, three top key messages on what you want to be saying, short and sweet, concise. I often counsel our folks to think about a seventh grade audience at home. That's who you're speaking to. So write and tailor your communications to a younger audience, mainly because the education level of sort of the average world, that's the type of communication style that they like to be communicated to. Don't use jargon. I often see people coming up with, you know, POS. What's a POS? things that might be in your industry, LEED certification of buildings, like what the heck's LEED, right? That's all jargon. Keep that out of your messaging as you go forward. Really think about concise things. And when you have your three top line key messages for a crisis, after you, of course, that statement that I told you to put away and save, think about one crisis a month for the next 12 months and just put it away. When you're in a crisis, what are the top three key messages you want to deliver? Because that'll help you communicate it out. And then how do you communicate that into the different channels that are there? Hopefully some of you might have a social media person or marketing person. They can probably help you to develop out the different types of communications you might need. But I would say if you want to just keep it simple, think about the email message that you might be sending out to your staff, to your external audiences, to your customers, and have that sort of in the backhand of it. But as you create your messaging, think short, concise messaging that is out there that allows you to think about the wider reach of the different type of audiences that are out there. And then if press releases are, we don't really talk much about that, and I don't know if I'll get into that. I would say in a time of crisis, we're not usually issuing press releases. These are more statements that you might be putting out there that show up. If you've released a statement, you might consider putting that if you have a newsroom on your website, the statement up there. If you have something to say, you might consider on the homepage, just a top line message around the crisis that's there. Again, this is your online storefront. This is the storefront that people are visiting in a time of situation or crisis of sorts. So think about that as you go forward. And then think about the different, assess the different online areas where you might be appearing. More often than not, when I'm taking a first call with a prospect or a new client, I'm do a quick Google search myself. And most people don't realize they have, you know, our old Twitter accounts or an old YouTube page that some employee created years ago that's just sitting out there. Those are all things that I would encourage you to consider as part of your online reputation now before there's a crisis. Just take inventory and stock of what's out there on the internet that's there. There's a tool called SEM Rush that has a free tool that can help you with that as well. It's called SEMrush.com. There's a question from the audience on whether or not we'll have a PDF of this after. Yes, we will. We'll be glad to share it out as we go forward.
And I would just note on the press, proactive press angle too, there are obviously a couple different approaches rather than just, even just if we do a statement instead of a press release, you'll find some organizations in these situations might want to go directly to one reporter or outlet that they know will cover a story with sensitivity and thoroughness, as opposed to just sending it out to all the TV news desks and Seattle Times and hoping that they'll cover it the right way. So I know sometimes we would recommend an action like that in terms of getting your story or your side of things out to the press is working with one individual that you trust rather than blasting it out. But it's all kind of case by case.
And that's another point on your newsroom, on your website. Is there a press contact page? Most press like to have a direct contact phone number or email address, even if it's press at your own organization. Have that in there as an opportunity for press to reach out to you so that they can direct questions to you. And if you want to be contacted, that's another way to make sure that that's happening. So moving on to crisis response and management, initial response and action steps. Again, just thinking about the quick and decisive response you might take, activating your crisis team, assessing the situation, and then taking immediate actions as you go forward to developing it out. Designate your spokespeople, identifying the key messaging, and then anticipating questions and concerns. And then again, monitoring and adapting your strategies based on the real-time social media conversations that are happening, the real-time press that's happening. We have tools that, if you needed it, we can get all the TV clips from any TV station in the country with a matter of seconds of it airing and tell you exactly where, what times that they appear. The same with social media. There are tools out there like Sprout Social, and others that folks like us subscribe to that allows you to help monitor the stuff. But you also, there's a lot of free off the cuff types of tools that are out there. And if you do a quick search, even in ChatGPT, say, ask prompted, what are the free tools out there that allows me to help manage a social media conversation in a time of crisis? Or how do I monitor TV clips for free? There's ChatGPT will tell you. Some good clips out there. All right. So post-crisis, this is a step that's usually skipped in all the stuff that we do. And often I would say, we call it a key learning session. So a month, 2 months after the situation, just sit and talk about, okay, whew, breathe. So crisis is over. What did we learn? What did we not do? What do we need to do for the future? What do we need to prepare? Most people in this time think about, I wish we created that one statement a month for 12 months or had some sort of blueprint in the folder that we can go back to. Because if you have that, you're one step ahead in a time of crisis. And in a time of crisis, you're thinking about the business. You're not thinking about the communications, and you don't want to be thinking about the communications, but the communications part is your reputation. It's one of the biggest things that's out there. In addition to the business decisions you're making, the communications, the PR aspect is the reputation preserver of the brand that you've built all these years. I mean, you talk about different types of products out there, things like water. You know, the explanation I have is, you know, why am I drinking Icelandic water versus essential water? Water is the same thing. It's the reputation and brand that this company has built that sets it apart. I mean, essential water, all the things that we've been drinking, all the others that are on the shelf, why do we buy different types of water? It's a brand, it's a reputation that people have invested lots of money and time to go build. That's the equivalent of your business, at your hotel, your restaurant, your, you know, whatever it is that you've got as a service industry in the hospitality space. So spend the time, do a post-crisis analysis, bring the team in, bring the lawyer to the table, spend the extra $100, a couple $100 that they might be charging you to just sit and evaluate and talk through, what do we learn, what do we need to improve for the future, so that you could really update, you know, the different responses, the team that you have in place to build better communications. There are things like, do we need an email alias set up? So it's crisis at your company name, and then you put all the people that are in it that can be part of it, or you create, you know, the SWAT team or whatever it is that you might have that go together to service you. And then I often say, once you have a shell of an outline, even if it's a one-page outline of how we're going to respond to a crisis from a communication standpoint, just pull it out once a year to think about the different ways we might want to be communicating and making sure that it's real. And if nothing else, update the contact information, phone numbers, have home addresses of staff that are on it, because you might need that in a time of crisis. Have backup. I have an old school landline at my house, just because you just never know when, in terms of communications, you might need it. Yeah, if you're, you know, the West Coast, we have earthquakes and such, and so you never know when those lines are going to go out. So I have a couple tips, and then we'll conclude here shortly. I also have, we have a PR failure newsletter, and I pulled the most recent ones that I'll just walk through, fun little anecdotes of things out there that's there. Kyle, do you want to walk these? These come from our media trainings.
Yeah, so I think these are kind of evergreen for any kind of media opportunity or even just speaking in front of others. But I think making sure you and your team know kind of the scope of the interview going into it. Don't just answer the phone and say, yeah, I'm ready to do an interview. You know, try to get the scope of what types of questions you're going to ask, or at least what kind of topics do you want to cover? And just, it could be framed as just wanting to make sure that you have the right information gathered. But we find that's crucial, so folks aren't caught off guard. I think responding to the kind of the key point or the key message or the headline first, especially with local TV, you know, there's such small little sound bites when that shows up on TV. So it would really start off with like, what's the main thing you want to say? Then supporting points. If you have to reiterate one of those key messages, say it a couple times. I mean, there's no harm in it. The paper is not going to print it twice. The TV is not going to air it twice. But if they hear it twice, then it's likely that they know it's important and it's more likely that it's going to be included. So don't be afraid to repeat those. Really focus on the audience that's listening to it. You're not trying to win over a reporter. You're not trying to make yourself look good. Figure out what the audience needs to hear from you at that time. I think, you know, again, key message, especially if something, hey, maybe this is not something we're comfortable answering, or we don't know how to answer, find a way to pivot back to what you do want to talk about and one of those key messages. And that just comes with practice. And, you know, even if it's just the cliche of standing in front of the mirror and doing it. You know, try not to use jargon, as Aaron mentioned before, but, you know, it may be if you don't want to be quoted, try to use jargon. But again, that gets a little more sticky. So we try to just steer clear of that, but always talk about the positive frame. Here's what we're working on. Here's what we've been doing. Here is what we're focused on. Not so much, we're not doing this. We promise we didn't do that. Like that ends up getting quoted in ways that are not appealing, especially out of context. So the more that you can just speak to, here's what we're looking at, here's what we're doing, here's what our team's focused on, here's our priority, any kind of framing like that is big and helpful. So finally, just as much as it might be difficult during a crisis, try to project confidence, try to smile, try to, if you look like you're melting behind the scenes or your world is ending, it's not going to do any favors for your organization. So as much as you can try to project confidence and happiness is a big help.
Yeah, I'd say the 2 points on that one, of course, in a crisis, if someone died, don't smile, right? You're dealing with a negative situation. The other thing is when it comes to like a phone conversation or a TV interview, I worked in radio at the early part of my career. And the thing they taught us to do in radio school, which is to smile when you talk, because when you smile, when you talk, you sound happier and more energetic and more collegial in a conversation. When you're talking without a smile in your voice, you have a more monotone voice. And you could just hear how I just the different parts of my voice when I just did that, right? I'll do it one more time. So if you're smiling, it'll help you relax. It'll help you project confidence. It'll be, you're a lot more warm and connected when you're not smiling. It's a little bit more down and to the point. And so that's what they teach in radio school. It's how you project. That could actually help you in day-to-day interactions with customers, clients that are out there. If you're smiling, you have a better approach on it. And then the second on the positive frame, never talk negatively about your competition in public. Don't say something you don't want out there that you would ever see in writing anywhere, right? So in a time of crisis, just in general, don't talk negatively about your competition. Leave it on the playing field, if you will, and go do better by taking their business and growing that way versus talking negatively about them. Never go off the record, kind of like that no comment thing. We really try to push folks to never go off the record. I've got an example of, we had an interview with a CEO of a big company. We did the whole interview for an hour with the reporter. Then they went in the elevator and he said, you know, I'm going to go off the record here and tell you other stuff. And all the stuff he said off the record ended up being in the story. So don't ever go off the record. And the same with, if you call in a reporter and say, hey, I want something to share with you, would you hold this under an exclusive, or I'm going to tell you this under an embargo, or I'm going to tell you this ahead of time. If they don't agree to it, don't ever say it. So again, it goes back to, if you don't want it out there in the public, don't say it. Really hold on to it until you're ready to go. You know, people tend to share too much because they feel it builds trust, it builds friendships. There's no reason to do any of that stuff. Avoid anger, don't lie, forget to make connections to messaging, avoid repeating what the reporter or someone might be saying to you. They ask you a question, you repeat the question in your answer, which we highly recommend as part of media training. Don't do it if it has any negative in there. Just be careful about what you're saying. Don't feel free to correct false assumptions, and then never use the negative form like, hey, I did not lie. That suggests you lied in it as well. And then just with reporters, to get to know them, use body language. We tend to say, you know, use your hands, your gestures, that makes you more animated. I think this is the first time this entire webinar that you see my hands on camera. You can actually see that I'm projecting a much more positive viewpoint in it all. We often encourage sitting at the edge of your chair. I've got a roller chair, which obviously when you're working in an office is different, but in a TV interview, sit at the edge of your chair, put your 2 feet at the bottom of your chair, one maybe tucked under. It allows you to sort of sit up and be committed to the conversation. And then here's some others on the screen that you can go through. So in conclusion, 4 different types. Obviously understand the different types of crises, preparing and planning, using effective communications, and then responding quickly and being decisive in how you do is how you work towards that. Any other questions? Open discussion.
Question for you.
Yeah.
How big does a crisis have to be before you start implementing your plan?
Good question. I think if you think it's a crisis, you should go implement the plan. There's no crisis too small. I have clients who are calling me about to lay off somebody. I mean, that's the type of stuff. If you have any sort of just pain around this, think ahead, just like you would an attorney. Think ahead about the possible challenges that might come from it and plan ahead. It's better to spend a little bit upfront than it might be on the other end of dealing with a big crisis issue that can emerge, right? So if you're preparing for it and thinking about it, that's definitely a much more timely thing. Kyle, you have your mic open.
Yeah, I mean, what you said, I think it's just not a fun exercise, but thinking in any situation, what's the absolute worst case scenario here? And making sure that, you know, we have to work towards that, even if it's not likely, or even if it's not even 25% likely, just we have to do our due diligence and prepare just in case. And I think that's the prism that you should look through all this stuff. And even if it seems minor, but you say, well, unlikely, but this could balloon into something else, then it's worth having the messaging and the plan and the workflow and all of that. And to Aaron's point, like a lot of the crisis work we've done doesn't even see the light of day because it's all just behind the scenes, getting that prep together, making sure that just in case that worst case scenario does happen, that these teams are prepared and they have all the ammo they need should something actually come out or it turn a lot worse.
Another question from the audience. Are there any kinds of crises which could impact the hospitality industry that your firm is generally anticipating in 2025? Maybe with a new city council member or with the Trump administration coming into office or TikTok potentially being banned?
All of that. I think the other thing is the minimum wage going up, start of the first in the Seattle area, and what that does to the state of Washington. I mean, I know the Washington Hospitality Association has taken this on head as a number one of the key priorities for the organization. I think that is that impact it has on the business is a crisis. I think TikTok being banned is I don't know how feasible, I don't know how that's going to be possible in a digital age. I think that's more pressure. And again, I have no insight into this other than my own personal belief on this. I think it's just pressure on TikTok to sell the company to a US company so that it moves over. I do think that over the last couple months, I've gone on my own journey of just trying to understand digital media and the algorithms that are out there. I mean, 3 videos a day on your own Instagram channel of you talking with captions on it gets you, you know, 100% or more engagement on your own channels for your own company or for your own self by doing it. And Instagram's really mirroring TikTok's algorithms and approach. And the reason I'm sharing that is I think Instagram is a real growth mechanism because of TikTok's perhaps demise in the last year or so. I think Spotify is going to be doing a lot more podcast video type stuff, so it's something to start to look at. I had a meeting with one of my college buddies who's the vice president of programming at NPR, who says their NPR itself is investing a ton of money into a partnership with Spotify to create a lot more content. So you're going to see Spotify starting to break into other areas of stuff. And I would just start to pay attention to some of those types of trends that are out there. Kyle, anything?
No, I mean, I would echo all that. I think, as we mentioned before, the one that comes to mind for me is, you know, the data breaches, cyber attacks, stuff like that. Maybe not as relevant for the super smaller businesses, but we still have seen it with them. And the ripple effects can be quite nasty from a financial perspective, PR perspective, all of the above, and something we're seeing more and more of.
Quite a bit. I mean, and investing in insurance actually in that space and on cyber is even more important today than ever before. Last couple of years, the amount of companies who've called me because an employee wired $100,000 or $200,000 accidentally to someone that got into their email system and hacked, and it was someone that wasn't supposed to have that, and the processes and systems are our worst nightmares coming to life. We've seen a lot of that stuff. So I do think like data theft is a real deal. I think the administration change is definitely something that we're all paying close attention to, pluses and minuses, depending on where you're at on politics. But we'll see a lot of that as it plays forward. But I think minimum wage is definitely something that is going to continue to impact us.
One last question, and then I want to thank you guys both so much for this great information. My last question is, how important is establishing a relationship on social media with your guests and your audiences before a crisis happens?
I'd consider it, you know, I was hinting at this earlier, if you could create some sort of like council with some key stakeholders, brand ambassadors, a brand ambassador program, so that in a time of crisis, you have folks that could be advocating for you, that are in it, that have prepared, and you could actually have them as advocates for you that you could implement as part of your war chest in a time of crisis. I think it's really important to have folks that are connected to the brand, connected to the ownership group, and no matter how small or big you are, I think that's in a very important play for you.
All right. Well, again, thank you both so much for your time and your expertise. To anyone out there, we are recording this. This will be up on our website later on today, and we will email it to you along with the slideshow. And again, thanks so much. This was great.
Good to chat. Thanks for everyone. Have a great holiday season and look forward to meeting you all soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, wahospitality.org, where you can learn more about the restaurant and lodging industries and the Washington Hospitality Association. Be sure to subscribe to the show in iTunes, Google, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Thank you so much for that effort. Until next time.